And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, doing this via mobile tonight, folks. So this is our disclaimer to start. If it sounds like I am hot garbage compared to previous episodes, that is because I am. I am on my cell phone driving back from a long day in Chicago at the Nike opening camp. So the quality of me tonight is not going to be as high, so please bear with us. I know Luke's trying to do everything in his power to make me sound as good as possible in terms of kind of sound quality wise. So we figured that we got some requests via the Twitter machine, and as I've been in spring practice, people have been wanting to know when's the next GGR episode coming out. So with me on the road for another 4 hours as I'm driving back to Minneapolis tonight, Luke and I figured it can't be a better time than right now than to record an episode. So here we are, Luke.
Yeah. All right. A lot's happened since we talked. Let's see. We have a new head coach. I believe we've talked since we have a new head coach.
I think the last podcast we did was the signing day recap.
Oh yeah. You're absolutely correct. So we had a podcast recapping the class that PJ Fleck was able to bring in a really short turnaround. And we also found out that I don't follow recruiting very closely, which most people probably have now figured out. I don't follow very closely at all. Okay. So let's actually get into the transition. Anytime there is transition, no matter what sport, at the highest level, being the head coach, you always see, you basically see big changes. It doesn't matter, right? You're going to see guys transfer. You're going to see some guys kind of basically showing the door. And we still might see more attrition here at the end of spring practice. But at this point, we have seen some people leave on by choice, right? And we've also seen some people leave by not by choice, being that they were expelled because of what happened earlier in the fall. So a little bit to kind of segue us into spring practice. So you want to recap us a little bit, Ryan, on where we're at in terms of people that have left the program?
Yeah. As Luke said, I think it's been at least probably 2 months now since we've recorded. So I'm sure everybody has been following along on the case that never seems to die, which hopefully is now put to rest, and the sexual assault case from the young woman against the former football players. So there were four, I believe at least four, expelled, and Tamarian Johnson, Dior Johnson, Ray Buford, and then Keontae Harden's appeal of his was upheld as well. Ray Buford and Tamarian Johnson and Dior Johnson are now at Arizona Western Community College out in Arizona, obviously. And Keontae hasn't announced what his future plans are because it is only within a week or two since his appeal was denied by the University of Minnesota. So I'm sure there's probably another one that I'm forgetting now after a long day, but those are the four to really know there. And then there have been a couple of transfers as well. Connor Mays decided after the first week of spring practice that it just wasn't going to be the right fit for him, which does not surprise me in the least bit. Alex now is still at the University of Minnesota, but he was not playing football with his brother, obviously, because of some injury issues that forced his career to be shortened. And Connor trying to work in with a new offensive system, work in with a new offensive line coach, just thought the fit wasn't going to be great for him, and he decided to transfer. So he's actually going to end up with what I believe is his father's alma mater and TCU for the remainder of his career, which is a little bit surprising to me that, a guy like Connor Mays, who didn't necessarily contribute as much as I think people thought that he was going to when he came in with some high star rankings and whatnot, and that he's able to land on his feet at TCU at his father's alma mater is very good for him. So hopefully he can provide some depth there and immediate depth for them as maybe a swing guard for the next 2 years there. And then Galen Elmore is the most recent departure. He's going to be a grad transfer after this year. Galen came in with Jerry Kill. He was extremely close with Jerry and that entire staff. And Galen was sitting out because of offseason surgery. And he just, with PJ Fleck coming in, he just didn't think that the fit was going to be great for his final season. and he decided to become a grad transfer. And it's a little bit interesting as well that he has since picked up grad transfer scholarship offers from places such as Oklahoma and South Carolina, which is a bit surprising to me considering the on-field production doesn't exactly match that or what I saw on tape. But Galen is a very good-looking kid in terms of he's 6'5", 275 pounds. And I think these other coaches think they can do something with him to, again, provide depth and maybe some spot starting abilities at their universities. So they're down some guys. Ted Stieber was a former Gopher offensive lineman, was on scholarship last time we talked. He has since he has been out, or he's given up his football career because of injuries. Another walk-on offensive lineman and Noah Kuhn has given up because of injuries as well. So we'll get into it, but offensive line is basically Armageddon right now, and it's as of Saturday, they only had four healthy offensive linemen, so any hope of doing team or 11-on-11 was dashed quickly. So there's been some departures. I do anticipate after the spring there's going to be more transfers as we see more and more guys figure out that this may be not the right fit for them. Maybe they were buried on the depth chart before PJ Fleck got here, and now they're continually going to be buried, and they're going to seek playing time elsewhere, or maybe they just don't see a fit with PJ Fleck. It happens in every coaching transition. It doesn't bother me at all. It doesn't alarm me at all, but I do anticipate some more attrition after the spring as well. So Minnesota's down some bodies, and as they wait for their summer enrollees to get here, they need some bodies this spring to finish off the last half of their spring ball practices.
All right, so let's chat a tiny bit about just injuries in general, right? This is an off season where the Gophers, I've heard Fleck talk about this or read this in writing a handful of times, where he was basically flabbergasted at the number of off season surgeries they had. Now we've had a couple of years now with guys. Well, I think this is just the nature of football. I don't know how common this is from university to university, but you got guys that are quitting because of injuries more, and a lot of them are linked to concussions, right? That are basically stepping away from the game because of the injuries and the long-term effects that can have. And I guess my question for you, Ryan, is we talked, I guess I'll set up the question a little bit more, but we talked at length about, you know, kind of how hard the Kill and Clay's practices would be and how they, you know, they would rep stuff, in full pads a lot. Are you going to see a transition here with PJ where they're not going to go as hard in full contact?
I think it's early to say. I've only seen five spring practices, but what I will note is the amount of reps that they're getting in team is very limited, obviously, because they do only have five offensive linemen. They did get six for about three periods as Sam Fluter returned, but then Quinn Osland went out with an injury, which is now sidelining him for the rest of the spring. So I don't know if it's necessarily about how hard they're going, but I think the amount of quality reps instead of quantity reps is the thing to note here. And that's kind of the tough part about my job is trying to evaluate some of the linemen play this spring. I don't know whether to, so say a defensive lineman breaks into the offensive backfield. Now, could it absolutely be technique and strength wise? Sure. But could it also be attributed to the fact that this is the same offensive lineman going for every rep, and maybe it's the seventh straight play where the defense gets to rotate and, you know, the remainder of the guys in the offense are rotating. So are they gassed? And so if it's because they're gassed, well, I don't really know how to draw too many. There's very little tackling. I've yet to really see this team wrap up, you know, bring guys to the ground. Obviously, they don't have a lot of bodies to do so. They're trying to get as many, just wrap up to the whistle. But what I also will say is PJ Fleck practices are some of the most communicative practices I've ever seen, and some of the most up-tempo and energy-laden practices. So in terms of communication, I don't think you can get any more different than Tracy Clay's and PJ Fleck. Tracy Clay's would stand 30 yards behind every play at spring practices or just fall practices, and you couldn't really hear what he would be trying to yell at the defense or what he was trying to yell. Wasn't always as engaging with the team. And again, I'm not saying that's right or wrong. It's just what it was. Whereas PJ, most hands-on head coach I've seen, no matter what the position group is. Obviously, him being having a wide receiver coach background, he spends a lot of time with the wide receivers and offers tips there. But in that same respect, he's not afraid to go over to the defensive backs, the defensive linemen, quarterbacks. I mean, you name it. He will go over and try to bring some instruction. And as again, you know, as a player, you're obviously going to listen to your position coach. So if your name is Nick Conley, you're listening to Ed Warner on the offensive line, obviously. But when the head coach comes over and he says something, you better listen to it because he is obviously the head man in charge. And that also being said, every position coach under PJ Fleck is always talking. So when they go 7-on-7 or 11-on-11, which is basically team for them, I'm including 7-on-7 in that because, again, they don't have enough offensive linemen to do a lot of 11-on-11. They're always talking. They're always trying to get something across to their players. They're trying to relay a play in. They're always just trying to get something across. And, I mean, I could say that about a handful of guys on the last staff, you know, Jay Savell in particular. Mike Sherrill's obviously too as well. And I think that Bert Miller, you could throw in that conversation as well. But that's just some kind of coaching that Minnesota hasn't had in recent years. So a lot of talking. And in terms of energy, I mean, PJ is always going 110 miles an hour every moment of his life. And I know we've talked about it on previous episodes, Luke, but I think that PJ Fleck's energy is genuine. The way he speaks in front of a camera is genuine because I can guarantee you from the numerous times I've spoken with him, when the camera is off, it's still that same guy. It's that up-tempo guy. You know, before practice ended on, I believe, Thursday, him and the SID, Paul Rovnak, were running to the media and they were playing, you know, soccer with a football and they're just having fun. And it's just, again, the guy just knows how to win over the media. And again, that's great because you can win the columns, but your on-field production is what ultimately is going to determine your success. But he's just a very genuine guy. So a lot of energy, you know, if somebody does a great play, you know, maybe under Tracy Clays, they get like a, I don't even know what Tracy would do because he'd be too far back from the play to really acknowledge it. But PJ is not afraid to come up, run up, jump on the guy's backs or tapping him on the helmet or, you know, running up to him, giving him a big hug. You know, it's just modern-day college football to me because what the head coach is in modern-day college football is basically the CEO. He's the face of the program. And most importantly, he's the one that needs to do a lot of the recruiting. And I think that's all different things that PJ Fleck is excelling at here early on in his Minnesota tenure. So in terms of the way Minnesota has been able to market things, the way that he's been able to really dive into recruiting and really immerse himself in that, that's a stark change from what Minnesota's had a head coach where previous head coaches in recent years would go weeks without watching tape of recruits, which is absolutely mind-boggling to me. And I can guarantee you PJ is putting in a lot more effort than that. I mean, Luke, you and I talked about this. I don't remember if it was on the podcast or if it was just between you and I, but when you look at what Mark Coyle wanted in terms of him having a marketing guy background, I don't think you can get any better with a guy like PJ Fleck.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we talked about this offline, but you know, with Mark Coyle having that marketing background, and that's, you know, kind of how he made his way up the athletic department ranks. It makes a lot of sense that this last year in particular, you know, Tracy Clays was not a guy that he felt like he probably could market. But now you look at Minnesota and the existing infrastructure that they had in terms of, you know, the social media and their YouTube channels and that, they are really, really pushing hard with PJ and promoting PJ. And they've more or less done that. They basically did the same during basketball with Patino. And you can see that they're definitely making a push. It'll be really interesting now that Coyle will have been here a full year to see if we see that grow or change. I think they've definitely got two very marketable coaches in their top revenue sports.
Well, it also helps that Mark Coyle finally has some power to do what he wants, considering up until that, I think it was a Thursday in January that Eric Kaler said you know, Mark, you've been here long enough. Why don't I let you do your job? So immediately once that happens, Tracy Claes is fired. TJ Fleck is hired. And now here we are. So, yeah, I'm going to be interested to follow what a Mark Coyle athletic department with Mark Coyle actually having power for once in his Minnesota tenure is going to look like. So, I mean, you and I had talked about it, I think, offline as well, that you saw a 9-win Minnesota team last year, and I couldn't remember in recent memory any less marketing for that team, whether it was billboards, radio advertisements. It just, for someone who makes a drive from the East Metro to downtown Minneapolis a lot, and as I approach campus, I usually, you know, during the Jerry Till season where they beat, I think it was Michigan and Nebraska, I used to see billboards all the time, and thinking to myself, this team just won 8 games in a regular season, and I haven't seen a billboard for it. How can you not be marketing that? But now that you have PJ Fleck in, and eventually once the season comes, you know, we'll talk expectations, but I do think that definitely need to be lowered, even though Jerry Kill. I feel like that could be a whole other podcast. The Jerry Kill comments from this past week where he says that 2017 was the year they were building for, which is a bunch of, you know, I don't want to put an explicit tag on this podcast. So 2017 was never the year they were building for. I can 100% verify that forever. If they were building for 2016, and that was last year, if they had a quarterback who didn't throw away the ball in the fourth quarter, they would have won 10-plus games. And then saying that P.J. Fleck walked into a gold mine is not true. We will start with that. I mean, maybe compared to what Jerry Kill walked in with he was one player away from transferring, and if they would have transferred out, they would have lost scholarships and obviously a team with very little college talent, and he obviously built it up. But that being said, because of the sexual assault deal, because of injuries, because of transfers, and just because of this was going to be a down year anyway for Minnesota, there isn't a whole lot to really hang your hat on besides some running backs and some linebackers. So
yeah,
I feel like I'm going off on a tangent, which wouldn't be a Gopher Gridiron radio episode without it.
Yeah. I will say this. I do believe very strongly that Mark Coyle, you know, he might have the power now, but he has not particularly handled things as well as I would have liked my athletic director to handle things.
Oh, absolutely not.
He is totally, he seems to have maybe gotten a little, he maybe has gotten off a little bit since the, since hiring PJ Fleck, but he still has a lot of respect to gain, at least from me. I don't know if anybody else.
Well, the
still
way
feels
he
that
handled
way.
That sexual assault deal,
yes.
Again, how much are you going to chalk up to Eric Kaler saying, Mark, here's what you can say, here's what you can't say, and how much are you going to chalk it up to?
Well,
you know, this is Mark Coyle acting on his own. I don't know, because I think it's both. But that being said, you know, one thing that bothered me was Antoine Winfield, you know, being named in the investigation, then cleared, and then the young woman appealed that, so he was suspended again, but then he was ultimately cleared again. You know, I would have liked to see something from Mark Coyle saying, like,
yeah,
our bad. Because anytime you Google Antoine Winfield's name for eternity, it's going to be linked to a sexual assault case in which he was cleared by the police, he was cleared by the U in terms of wrongdoing. So I just would have liked to seen something there, but it's here nor there.
Like, okay, I don't want to. We kind of gone off on a tangent, but I want to keep running with this. Here's the thing that maybe frustrates me the most. I understand the student privacy rule thing, but in the same respect, like, it feels like a total cop out that they don't make some sort of acknowledgement. Now, some of this is just garbage that Kaler has to, or the Coyle has to deal with, right? Because the EOA makes their own rulings and et cetera. He has absolutely no control over it. He just has to follow process and protocol. But that said, at the same time, the whole way that the situation was handled, I know he's acknowledged that he's made some mistakes, but in the same respect, like, it doesn't quite feel right. I mean, the whole situation was lose-lose from the absolute beginning for anybody involved, but I don't know. I think he's still got a lot to prove, in my opinion. All right, and all that to say, I think we need to actually talk a little bit of football. So, Ryan, spring practice, how about offense? What are we seeing from the offense? We know that, you know, O-line is probably not even worth talking about because of the injuries and stuff. So let's talk skill positions.
Yeah, just a precursor for everyone who doesn't know who's out for spring practice. I'm going to try to do this off the top of my head. The quarterback wise, everybody's here and healthy. Running back wise, they're healthy. Wide receivers, Philip Howard is out. I think that's it there. Tight ends, Brandon Lingen is out for the spring, recovering from off-season foot surgery. Colton Beebe is out for the spring, recovering from meniscus surgery. Bryce Witham has been out every single practice. I've heard that he's battling a back and a hip injury. So three of Minnesota's five tight ends are out for the spring, which means Minnesota has two tight ends. Then we get to the offensive line, which is Armageddon. They have three starters out from last spring or from last fall. And Garrison Wright, who had off-season surgery, Vincent Calhoun, who had off-season foot surgery. Ryan Just was a preferred walk-on from Rochester JUCO down there. He is out, and Jared Weiler is out recovering from off-season tricep surgery where he tore his tricep in the season and he played through it for a while. So Jared Weiler is a tough SOB, and I think as of all three of those offensive linemen who played through a lot of crap last year, defensive line-wise, Galen Elmore was out for the spring recovering from off-season surgery. Other guys like Julian Huff, I'm going to include kind of on the defensive line as he's had that edge rusher role. He's been fully dressed every day, but he has not been participating in practice. He had off-season ankle surgery that he sustained from an injury in the bowl game. So he is not yet ready to go, but once he is, that'll be worth noting. Blake Cashman, everybody's favorite person who thinks, why isn't Blake Cashman on scholarship? Folks, Blake Cashman is going to be on scholarship in the fall. Please stop asking. There was a weird two-year rule where you couldn't give a preferred walk-on a scholarship. It's complicated to explain, but just know he's going to be on scholarship this fall. He is out. He had off-season shoulder surgery. Carter Coughlin is practicing, but he had off-season shoulder surgery. Cody Polk is out for the spring. He had off-season surgery. Then we get to the defensive backs. Coney Durr is out for the spring at offseason ACL surgery. I'm sure there's more I'm forgetting, but as you can tell, there's a lot of bodies out for the spring. Let's start with offense. Let's start with everybody's favorite position and quarterback. I think that it's a clear two-horse race between Connor Rhoda and Demaryius Crofton, and I don't think it's close. I didn't really know what to expect going into my first spring practice that was open to the media, and I think it's clear from the handful that I've seen now that it is Demaryius Crofton and Connor Rhoda a titch above everybody else. And the dilemma I keep talking about on Gopher Illustrated and I think with different people on the Twitter machine too is I think that if things continue to progress the way I believe so, that if these two are anywhere near similar in terms of where the coaching staff puts them in terms of whatever tier you want, it's clear that you should start Demaryius Crofton, but your dilemma is, and again, I know that folks may not understand this one as much, but, you know, they've been selling to their 2018 quarterback, Brennan Armstrong, that, you know, you're going to be the guy, you know, you're, you know, going to be the guy that's going to, you know, we're going to have Connor for a year. That's what they thought they were going to have coming into this 2017 season. But I just think that Demaryius can do so many more things and have, and in terms of, you look at Connor Rhoda, he is a fifth year senior where Demaryius Crofton is going to be a redshirt sophomore. Demaryius is going to have 3 years to potentially attain a ceiling that Connor Rhoda will not want. Because I think that Demaryius Crofton is the most naturally gifted quarterback on this roster, and I don't think it's close. It's been that way since day one, but the light bulb always hasn't been on consistently. For Demaryius, and I think you're seeing more and more of that this spring on and off the field. You look at the offense Minnesota's trying to install, which is a run-pass option. I just think that people look at Demaryius Crofton, and maybe it is because of the skin color, but they think he should be able to be more athletic do some more things with his legs. Folks, Demaryius Crofts is a pocket passing quarterback who can, yes, make some plays with his legs, but where his most, I don't want to phrase this, where the majority of his gifts are because of his arm. I mean, he can make some throws that are, you know, whether it's anticipatory throws, or if it's, a back shoulder throw on the sideline, or just dropping it into a bucket on the field, or trying to fit it in between the linebacker and the safety. He has the arm talent to do so. You know, where his struggle was his consistency with his accuracy, and when it was just making sure that when he went through his progressions, he saw the progression, you know, he saw where he needed to throw the ball, that he threw it, made the throw correctly. And I think that Demery, you know, while he and Connor Rhoda have been seeing a majority of the ones split down the middle, if not Connor Rhoda taking more, I just think it makes so much more sense to start Demery Croft. And then, again, that's no slight at Connor Rhoda. Again, I just, for as many people that didn't like Mitch Leidner, you know, I'm sure there's a host of you guys, but you also have to understand Connor Rhoda was behind him for that many years and he didn't beat him out. And again, you can say that's because the coaching staff had this unwarranted affinity for Mitch and how much of a leader he was. You know, yeah, that is going to play into their decision somewhat, but like, what did you see in that game against Maryland where he started that makes you think that he is going to be a bona fide Big Ten starting quarterback that Demery Croft can't do? Right. Again, Connor, if you can be a game manager with PJ Fleck, that's fine too, because the number one thing when you go to a Gopher practice, and again, for the folks who want to check out a PJ Fleck Gopher football practice, the one on Tuesday is open to the public. Starts at 4:45 at Bierman and Gursky Complex. I'd recommend getting there about 4:15, 4:20, as I do start early, and you can see everything I'm talking about. But I just think that Connor is limited in some areas where Demery can potentially reach a higher ceiling, because he does have 3 more years to do it, and he's just got more natural talent to do it as well. So Connor is the leader of the quarterbacks. I think that's very safe to say, but it's just Demery has more talent in this system, I think, that can really make Kirk Sriracha, Minnesota's new offensive coordinator, he can take this run-pass option offense to the next level. And the guys behind those two, Tanner Morgan is probably the third one that comes to my mind. That's Minnesota's early enrollee quarterback. He should still be going to prom next week, but he decided to enroll early in college. You're going to tell me he's short. I'll tell you he's 6 foot tall and that he looks incredibly short standing next to Seth Green at 6'4" and Demery Croft at 6'6" and Connor Rhoda at 6'3". I don't think Tanner's height really deters me a lot from him. The most impressive thing about him is the processor, the way he is fearless in terms of knowing that he trusts how to read a defense. And once he makes the correct read, there's no hesitation in delivering the ball to that read where it needs to be. And I just think that's very impressive for a kid who should still be in high school. He's got a very quick and short throwing motion. Arm strength, you know, isn't the greatest because he should still be in high school. But I think that he's going to be a pretty good player after him. I'd probably put Seth Green in that conversation. My biggest thing with Seth is he just has a ways to go as a quarterback still. He does have a little bit of a wonky throwing motion. I do believe that he's got to continue to build his arm strength, which is, again, folks, when I'm talking about arm strength, I'm not talking about him throwing the ball 50 yards down the field, because every quarterback at the Division I level can do that. But can he fit it between a linebacker and a safety and zone coverage to a receiver? Because if that's even a titch late, or if it's even a titch slow, it's going to allow the linebacker to either jump that ball in as he's dropping into his set, or it's going to allow the safety to come over the top and pick it. So I think that's got to continue to build. And then Seth has to continue to trust himself going through his reads. You know, when he's going from, you know, option A to option B to option C, you know, he'll go through it. It may be a little bit slower than a Demery Croft, but my biggest thing is he has to trust himself. And when he does identify the correct read, so say he goes to option, you know, option one isn't there. We're going to go to option two. Oh, it's there. Well, then it's hesitation, then I'm going to throw it. I mean, it's got to be, okay, one's not there, one's not there. Two's there, throw it. And again, it's just him trying to read a defense, know where the throw is, and trust himself that he can make that throw. Other guys, Neil McLaurin, a JUCO kid that the old staff signed, I don't think we need to be really talking about him much. I'm just going to be really blunt about it here.
Sure.
So, and then the final quarterback in the roster is an early enrollee walk-on by the name of Samuel Pickerton, someone that has been relaying these signals in from the sidelines to the quarterback. So I think it's Rota, I think it's Croft, and then I think it's everybody else at this stage. But that's your quarterback update.
All right, so let's just skip over running back because it's a pretty known commodity.
The only thing I'll say about running back is Shannon Brooks looks like the player I thought he was going to be last year. He looks a lot more confident.
Sure.
We've talked about it, Luke, where I thought that the latter half of last season, I thought Shannon Brooks was pressing because he knew that Rodney was going to get a lot of reps because Rodney was playing extremely well.
Sure.
And that if Shannon didn't do what his biggest thing was, which is being that home run threat, he thought he was going to get benched. Now he looks as explosive as I've seen him. He looks as confident as I've seen him. And I think Shannon, as of right now, should be the starter, but they're obviously these two guys are going to get a lot of reps together.
Well,
so
you got to remember that Shannon was injured for a good portion of the.
He was injured for those first couple of games. And again, I think him seeing Rodney have that amount of success, it didn't bother him.
Right.
But he knew that he had to, try and do a little bit more to make an impression or else Rodney was going to get all the snaps.
Right. Yeah. No,
and now that he knows he's on an even playing field and he has that confidence back and that burst back, I think he's in for a big season.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with you. I guess from my perspective, known commodity there, we know what we have. I mean, it's basically on the offensive line to be able to open the holes and we know these guys can execute.
Sure.
I'm curious about wide receiver. That was a position, I guess, under the previous staff that never really, I mean, outside of a player or maybe two players, it never had any real consistency, right? And this is a staff coming in that has, had some really high profile guys. I'm just curious to hear if anybody, if certain players have improved. Maybe have some guys that kind of got, tucked away in the depth chart, found a way to creep up under this new staff.
Two guys in particular really stand out to me so far, and that's Tyler Johnson from Minneapolis North, going to be a true sophomore, and then Rashad Still on the outside. I think those two, from what I've seen and from the people I've talked with near the coaching staff, I mean, those have been the two guys that have really stepped up here this fall. With Rashad Still, I don't think there's a player that PJ Fleck and wide receiver coach Matt Simon, I don't want to say pick on more, but demand more out of than Rashad Still, because they see what he has the athletic talents to do. I mean, him being 6'6", a tremendous basketball player, he has the abilities to do some things that other guys in the roster can't. But
sure.
The thing with Rashad has always been, how seriously is he going to take football?
Okay, I'm going to interrupt you here, because this is I'm not trying to throw Brian Anderson under the bus by any stretch of the imagination, but everything, and this is not from you, I'm not stealing this from you. These are other people I've talked to. The gripe on Anderson was you had to be 100% committed or, whatever it might be.
Or you got buried in that doghouse.
Yeah. I guess what you're saying now to me is at least refreshing, right? That we're going to take a more active role as a coaching staff to try and bring the most out of you instead of it's on you or nothing. I'm not going to try and basically take my leadership role. I mean, I guess that sounds very refreshing to me.
And I think you put it in a good way that, I think BA thought if you weren't 100% demanding that in yourself, and I see that, I'm not going to try and get you to do that. I'm just going to bury you in the doghouse. Where the approach Matt Simon and PJ Fleck take is, the big thing with Rashad and that they stressed him at practice is body language.
Sure.
And again, Rashad is one of the goofiest kids on the team. That's just his personality. I've talked about it too with some people. Rashad is from El Paso, Texas. His mother was in the military. He had to take care of his brother and sisters when he was growing up. Up was his mother, was away. And so once he got to college and didn't have to take care of anybody else but himself, I think that was a part of him was like, well, I get to finally be a kid again. And now he's had that for 2 years going into his true junior year now, where Simon and Fleck are like, okay, you've had your time to be goofy. You've had your time to, you know, to goof off a little bit. Like, you have the opportunity to be a special player because you have some gifts that other people don't have. You need to start taking it seriously. And they're trying to do everything in their power, you know, whether that's off the field, trying to get him in the playbook more than, or just on the field to become a leader more, just do the little nuances of the game. And I think that, you know, early on from what I saw, Rashad was struggling with that. But the last practice I saw, you know, you can see him learning and you can see him like specifically, for example, Rashad struggles in getting off press coverage on the line. You know, he was having some trouble getting off the line against some corners who he should have no business, you know, having issues going against. And you see like the techniques that Simon and Fleck are trying to teach him. And you see that starting to translate more and more into more consistent reps for him. And so I think Rashad Steele is one to keep an eye on. Then Tyler Johnson, flat and away, has been fantastic. He has been the best wide receiver on this roster. And he's another guy that was basically, where the heck was Tyler Johnson after he was in BA's doghouse there? So what Tyler does so well, and I think it really plays into the strengths of Matt Simon in this offense, and it's just these different route combinations. And Tyler is extremely explosive in short bursts. And where that pays dividends for him is, say, his get off the line. He doesn't get hung up in press coverage. He's able to get the defensive back on his hip or on his back. And then the way he's able to be explosive in the burst out of his route, you know, whether it's an out route, a corner route, you know, a slant or whatever it may be, he's explosive enough and he creates separation naturally because of that explosion. And he's just consistently and constantly open. I mean, there isn't a guy that is more open than Tyler Johnson. There isn't a player that Matt Simon doesn't try to critique more now than Tyler Johnson, because Tyler Johnson could be he could be special, folks. You know, I mean, Tyler is not going to run past you by any means. That's not what he does. That's not where he makes his hay. Where he makes his hay is these short explosions. I mean, that's why he was such a great basketball player. Is, you know, he can excel going up towards the rim. Tyler and Rashad have been probably the far and away the two best wide receivers thus far. You know, people asking, well, who's going to assume that leadership role? That's Eric Carter 100%. Eric Carter has stepped up, and the staff even wants him to step up even more into a bigger leadership role for these wide receivers, because there are so many young guys. So you're seeing that. You're seeing Melvin Holland arise from the dead from what was BA's doghouse. He's still, you know, I thought he was making some good progress early on. He's stalled out a little bit here the last couple of practices, but he does have some gifts that I think the staff can utilize as well. I'm still waiting to see that burst that Isaiah Gentry is famous for. I think in his only catch in a Gopher uniform, which was against Kent State, right? I think he took a hitch and then he drove up the field and you saw that acceleration for 15 yards. I don't know that it's ever going to get back to that because he's been dealing with some lower body injuries, but we'll see if that comes back to it. Drew Himileski, we're finally getting to see him for the first time because he was out all of practice recovering from what I believe was torn labrum surgery. He's extremely raw, but he does have some athletic talents to do some things as well. So a lot of work to do yet for Matt Simon. This is a wide receiver group that I think needs a little bit of a talent infusion, which hopefully they'll start to get this summer and then with the next recruiting class as well. But if I had to hang my hat on somebody leading Minnesota in catches next year, that would be Tyler Johnson.
You know, you've been pretty good at estimating that, so I wouldn't bet against you.
The one thing I also want to say is I really hope Brandon Lingan gets back to 100% of what he was. I don't want to sound bleak about the outlook here. Brandon's been battling injuries for the last 2 years, and I want to see it and believe it that Brandon Lingan can come back healthy for more than 4 games in a season. You know, it's something he's battled throughout his career, because when Brandon Lingan's healthy, he is a very, very good player. Right. And he's someone who could play on Sundays. It's just, this most recent surgery has me worried. So especially as Minnesota is searching for playmaking or pass catching threats. I hope Brandon Langen keeps what he was.
All right. So just, you know, really we've talked offensive line, not a lot to probably talk about there.
The only thing I'll really mention with the offensive line is I do think some of these guys do have a bright future ahead of them. Connor Olson from Monticello. Oh, my God. I hope it's Monticello or else I'm going to be angering somebody in central Minnesota. I think he does have a very bright future. He's someone who's very athletic, 6'4", 290 pounds, playing center for Minnesota right now. It's part of the reason why Connor Mays left is that they thought that Connor Olson had a higher ceiling than Connor Mays did because of his athleticism, his strengths, that he's able to contribute both in the pass blocking and the run blocking side of things. So the staff likes him quite a bit. Nick Conley is still someone that this staff is high on, a Red Wing native there. He's been playing every rep at right tackle. I think he's finally filled out his frame to where that's where this is the weight he's going to be contributing at. I still think he needs to get a little bit stronger in his upper body. But he bends well, and I think his lower body strength floor there is getting a lot better than what it was even a year at this time. Donnell Green, Minnesota's starter left tackle last year. I think he's still got a bright future ahead of him, and then we'll see what we can get out of Sam Schluter and Bronson Dovich. Two kids from the state of Minnesota as well. I think Sam has done well in his first few practices here. Again, these kids are seeing a ton of reps. Again, if you have an 11-play, 11-on-11 series, while some other guys on the offense, you know, at different positions such as running back will only get four of those reps or three of those reps, all five of these guys are getting all 11 of these reps. So, you know, these guys are warriors, and again, I can't stress enough, these kids are busting their tail running between drills, and then they have to go be in every rep. So Ed Warner's got his hands full.
All right, defense. I guess defensive line, we know this is a position. We've got a lot of experience that's going to be going away. But then defensive end, or that's defensive tackle, but then defensive end, it's it's not as clear. What are you seeing out of the defensive linemen?
Well, defensively, they're doing a lot of different things. They're doing a lot of different things schematically. They want to be a 4-3 team, but they just don't have the bodies that they want to be able to do that. So they're mixing in some 2-4-5, some 3-4, some 4-3 with an edge rusher, some even a goal line. I saw a 5-3 set. So new defensive coordinator Rob Smith is certainly keeping things up. But I think your base defense that you'll see as of right now for the fall is a 4-3 with one of the ends being a stand-up edge guy. And that role is being filled by three players and three players only right now, and that's Carter Coughlin, Teyon Devers, and then the early enrollee linebacker in Trent Guthrie. Carter, you know, I'm interested to see how this holds up because I don't really like having Carter Coughlin playing a defensive end spot against, like, a power running team like a Wisconsin or an Iowa just because Carter's not big enough and he's not meant to be that big. Carter's only 230 pounds, and you putting him against a, you know, head up on the tight end or head up on the tackle, that's just not a battle he's going to win very often. The issue is they don't have the bodies now to put out their defensive end. They're starting Winston Dilaudy-Boudère, who I think can be serviceable there in run support, and then he can provide some things in pass as well. I just think he's a solid player. But they just don't have a lot of bodies there because Teyon and Carter are very skinny, and they're meant as pass rushers. So, you know, maybe a guy like Jerry Gibson finally comes onto the scene. I think his spring has been a lot more up than down for me. They just don't have a lot of bodies at end, and they're going to get some more bodies in this summer. But I'm just intrigued to see how it plays out because, again, I don't want Carter there against a running team because he's giving up 70 pounds, and it's just not a battle he's going to win very often. Now, if it's third and long and you're asking him to rush the passer, him and Teyon, I mean, these two kids can do some things I don't think many guys on the roster can because that position and that edge rusher, you know, sometimes has responsibilities of the running back out of the backfield. And Carter Coughlin and Teyon Devers running with a wheel route have no issues. Teyon Devers is extremely explosive. He has that burst back from the non-conference where you saw those three sacks, those three forced fumbles. I think that he's going to be a force on pass rushing situations. And it's just I'm intrigued to see what they do there at end. And then obviously defensive tackle Steven Richardson is the GOAT. For those who don't know what GOAT means in today's society, greatest of all time, it's just meant that the player is pretty freaking good. Again, if you don't double team Steven Richardson, your offensive lineman is going to end up 3 yards in the backfield where your running back takes the handoff and he runs into his offensive lineman and screws up the play. So Steven Richardson been everything I thought he was going to be. Andrew Stelter has been starting alongside of him again. I think like a Cameron Botticelli type, just a guy that's very solid. Gary Moore, Minnesota's defensive work team player of the year the last 2 years, he's been showing more and more of those flashes that make you think, okay, Gary Moore might be having a pretty good season here by the latter half. And then Merrick Jackson, I just have temperate expectations for. Again, I think he can be serviceable as a run stuffing, one technique, but I just don't think you should ask him to do much more than that. So
okay.
They need some bodies at defensive tackle. They need some bodies at defensive line. They need to get some bodies. I think the theme should be this podcast. Minnesota needs bodies, but
yeah. So linebacker, we know this is a position of strength. They seem to have quite a few guys, even though some might be injured. You know, who's kind of standing out at that position right now?
Minnesota's 2016 linebacker class of Thomas Barber, Carter Coughlin, Kamal Martin, all in-state kids. Mike Sherrills and Jay Saville deserve a freaking raise wherever the heck they are now. Obviously, Jay at Wake and still recovering from his health issues, but those three kids are going to be studs. Like, Carter Coughlin, once they figure out what to do with him, he's going to be a pretty good impact player. Kamal Martin looks like an absolute freak. Outside linebacker, he's starting alongside Jonathan Celestine on the outside. And then, shocker that a Barber comes in, maybe not highly ranked, highly rated, highly talked about, but then produces on the field. Because Thomas Barber, starting in place of Cody Polk right now and ahead of Jalen Waters and Everett Williams, he's just a dude. I mean, he's not the biggest guy in the world, probably 5'11", but man, does he know how to get downhill in a hurry, deliver a smack, and he's got instincts like you wouldn't believe. So I'm very high on those guys. Jonathan Celestine is the leader of the linebacker crew. Again, it's what he's been known for throughout his career, tackling well in space. And now he's one of the captains of the team, and he's really embracing that leadership role as well. Rob Smith's going to have a lot of work to do to get all these bodies onto the field and make sure that they're fresh, because if they are fresh and the way he'll rotate them, Minnesota's going to be able to do a lot of things with these guys. So a lot of players at linebacker, and even more once they get Cashman and Polk back this fall.
Think they'll blitz a lot? Any feeling on that, having just watched?
Well, I think it's tough to say because they are still just installing the defense as a whole. So it's not like you can tell a whole lot from, you know, what they're trying to do. I mean, Kirk Schrouch is trying to install his run pass option offense, and Rob's trying to do a lot of things with the 3-4, the 4-3, the 2-4-5, the 5-3, just trying to see what players he has. What are their strengths, and how can I tailor this defense to make sure, while we fill some holes, that we can play to the strength field? So, I don't know. It's tough to say here early on. And
yeah,
even if I did know, I don't know. Paul Rovnak sometimes listens to this, Minnesota's SID. And I reveal too much, I could get media access for everyone taken away. So,
okay.
Paul, if you're listening, I care.
Hi, Paul. I'm Luke. Nice to meet you. Yeah, that's it. Okay, Ryan, real quick, defensive back. This is a position that we, you know, we're a little bit light, but there is some talent there.
There is. I think this may be the position I'm most nervous about right now, and it is because of bodies. Cornerback is almost as decimated as offensive line is right now, to be honest with everybody. Keandre Thomas and Antonio Chanot are taking all the reps with the ones, but the issue is they don't have anybody behind them. Like Zoe Creighton, you know, is serviceable if you put him in press coverage because he's 6'1" with length and he knows how to be a press cover corner there. But I'm just, with Kunle Ayinde, they started him at safety, this new staff did. Now he's a corner it's just, to me, he just looks heavy legged. Like, he's already starting to wear down with how explosive he is, how quick he is. And again, I'm sure Minnesota fans noticed that throughout the season as well. And, you know, his playing time suffered because of it, but they don't have any other corners on the roster after that. Like, legit, they don't have any other corners. And it's like, that's not good. So, and the issue is they only get in one for the fall. They have another guy that can potentially play corner and Adam Beck, but he's more of a safety. Like, they need to get some corners in ASAP. So, I mean, that's part of my hesitation there, because and on a positive note, Antoine Winfield is going to be a dude. Like, he's been playing a lot of safety. He's been playing a lot of nickel more of late as Minnesota experiments with some nickel things.
And he played some nickel before moving to starter at safety.
Yeah, he did. But I thought that, you know, safety was more of the, you know, I shouldn't say correct position for him, but it's just nickel is where Minnesota needs him at, because they don't have a lot of corners. And Antoine has those cover abilities that he can do some things there in the slot against some quicker guys. And he also can provide things in run support, like his father was so notorious for many years with the Buffalo Bills and the Minnesota Vikings. So, I mean, they're expecting Antoine. And the nice thing about Antoine, he's a true sophomore. It just, those leadership abilities come through in his play. They come through, you know, come through on and off the field. And I know the staff is very excited about his future. Duke McGee is the other starter at safety. Again, folks probably know Duke from leading the NCAA in targeting penalties. He's a big hitter. And I think that he's actually taking up this new Rob Smith defense a lot quicker than I thought he was going to. And that had been some of the issues with Duke, is understanding what Minnesota was trying to run. And then the other starter at safety with Antoine and Nickel has been Jacob Huff. You'll know his brother Julian Huff from his first 2 years, where Jacob was just a contributor on special teams. That's another – defensive backs as a whole is another place where Minnesota gets really thin really quick. And Jacob Huff has to take reps with the ones and the twos, because Minnesota really doesn't have another scholarship safety outside of Duke McGee, because Antoine's playing the nickel. Their two safeties are, you know, Kula Ende still plays some there, but Kent State transfer Troy Dupree is getting reps there with the twos. And I think he's going to be a pretty good guy on special teams, but it's just because, and, you know, people are going to say, well, why is Minnesota so thin there? Well, you do have to remember that lose two guys in Demaryius Travis and Jalen Myrick to the NFL, but they also lost three because of the sexual assault case with Keontae Harden, a former starter, Ray Buford, a former starter, and then Dior Johnson, a backup guy. All three of those guys are gone. Put that together with Demaryius and Jalen, and that's five guys you're missing, and they need to hit in the secondary for this 2018 recruiting class, because they need bodies, and they need bodies that can play right away. And if they're going to play right away, they need to be talented, or else Minnesota is going to be exploited. So, you know, I don't think it's anything that the old staff could have really foreseen. You know, it is what it is at this point, but Minnesota is going to need bodies there ASAP.
All right. The most important positions on the team, the specialists. What are we seeing?
Emma Carpenter, obviously Minnesota's or the Big Ten kicker of the year. You know, PJ likes to pick on him as well. And what I mean by that is, you know, they'll do some quick kick situations, or just when the specialists are doing their thing, you know, PJ Fleck will stand behind Emmett as he's about to kick, and as he's running up, you know, PJ will squirt a water bottle down his neck. You know, just trying to throw Emmett off, you know, from different type of situation. So that's interesting to watch as well. And then obviously Ryan Santoso with his enormous leg. We haven't seen a lot of punting here early on. We've only seen, I think they're only through seven spring practices, so we'll still have another eight more to see. But he's still got that big leg, and the big thing for special teams coach Rob Wegner is going to be, how can I harness that Ryan Santoso leg consistently? Because a lot of it was in his head, in my opinion, was Ryan would get flustered on the field, and he needs to, you know, hone that in and make sure his technique is there each and every time so he can deliver a booming ball. But In terms of kick and punt return, we haven't seen a whole lot of that as well. But some guys to note as punt and kick returners, Drew Himaleski, Eric Carter, both running backs, Shannon Brooks, and Rodney Smith. I know from talking with some sources inside the program, Minnesota is still searching, I guess I will put it in a polite way, for who the heck is going to return the ball, because they need to replace some guys there as well. So they have some holes to fill there too.
All right, I think just let's actually just close this one out. You know, I don't know if we'll get a chance to talk before the spring game, but are you anticipating probably a 7-on-7 kind of spring game this year?
Yeah, I don't really expect more than that. And I think folks have to temper their expectations if they thought they were going to actually see anything resembling a football game. Again, Minnesota, as of Saturday, actually only had 4 healthy offensive linemen. So hopefully they can get Bronson Dovich back here soon. And if that's the case, they'll have 5 healthy offensive linemen. And just, you can't ask those guys to go more than 10 plays or else they're going to get gassed and the defense is going to win every rep and the running back is going to get annihilated. So it's going to be more of a 7-on-7 type. You know, PJ doesn't know what he wants to do with that yet, but that's something they're still discussing, and we'll see how they address it. But don't expect more than a 7-on-7. And for people who want to hear a little recruiting talk, I think that we're a little over our time for today, but Luke and I will surely discuss it when we talk defense here next. I don't know if we'll talk next weekend or the weekend of the spring game, but we'll be back here in a week or two, and I'll have a lot to say. Obviously, me just leaving a combine camp at Chicago, getting to see a lot of these kids in person for myself, compete against some of the best talent in the Midwest, plus the thoughts of some people within the Minnesota program. We'll see how it goes, but just know that Minnesota's shooting for a top 25 recruiting class. As of right now, they're within the top 20 in the country of all programs across the nation. It's early yet, but they're starting to get some players that they may not have gotten, you know, previously in other years. I think 25 is realistic. I don't know if it's going to be attainable by the time signing day comes, because I think they're going to be around 25. Now, whether they're at 24 or if they're at 29, we'll have to see. But we'll get into a lot more recruiting talk on the next podcast. So we'll leave that carrot in front of the string there, or however that saying goes here at this time of the night.
Yeah, but you got to keep wanting them or bringing them back. You got to have some reason to bring them back. So we'll just cliffhanger them with the recruiting talk, of which I can't really speak to at all.
That's fine. I'm pretty sure that's my forte anyway. So I know I have a database of names of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of 2018 recruits throughout the Midwest and the country, and we'll get into that a little bit more. Also, if you have a question that you want Luke or I to tackle on the next episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio,
it really should just be you.
If you want me to talk about something that I haven't talked about yet, I guess. You can tweet Luke or I, so me at Ryan Burns MN or at Luke Buer, LukeBuer, and we will put it in a little file, or at least I will, and we'll address it on the next podcast. So
I'll make some smart remark back, probably very sarcastic.
And then I'll give you the answer that you are actually looking for. Luke's here for the comedic relief. I'm here for the information.
It's not even that funny. Okay, well, thank you, everyone, for listening, and go Gophers.